Richard Morris. I cut myself off.
Oh, well, that's fine.
All right, but I'm
you
gonna.
Didn't get impacted.
I'm back
you didn't
on
get
now.
Much impacted by the, did you get impacted by the storm very much?
No.
No.
Not at all.
You were far enough west.
Correct.
I like Pittsburgh. It's a great town. It's they really have had a renaissance, haven't they?
Yes, we have.
We're going to get started. What we do on these calls, of course, just as a reminder and for those who will be listening to the call later, we record these every 2 weeks, and they're a professional learning community. We work with the EPA in coordination with them, and our mission is to try to bring people together to talk about the environmental job training programs, how to get them started, how to sustain them as new grants requests for proposals come out. We'll be reviewing what it takes to make a good proposal and a good program and how to sustain that program. We have a website, brownfieldstoolbox.org, and we, of course, have an annual meeting that you all are familiar with. We also sponsor these professional learning community calls. And, of course, after each call, we send everyone notes. We have about 115 or 20 people that are following us. And we try to keep everyone informed. If someone has questions, they can bring them up. If they want to talk about a particular issue, we also do that. Someone just joined.
Hello, this is Autumn with Zender Environmental in Anchorage, Alaska.
Hi, Autumn.
Okay, we've asked everyone else how the weather is. Now, how is it up there in Anchorage?
It's 8 degrees. It's pretty cold here this morning.
Wow, that's pretty cold. Now, how do you celebrate Thanksgiving? Just like everyone else?
Oh, yeah. Lots of food.
Lots of food. Lots of turkey. Someone just joined.
Hi, did someone just join?
Hi, this is Lynn Zender from Zender Environmental.
Hi, Lynn.
Great.
Hi.
We've got two people from Alaska. Great. We were just talking about these 30-minute professional learning community calls. We do them every 2 weeks. The next one will be on December 5th. And then, of course, we'll have post-session notes. And anyone who is a part of this can write in questions. And if we can't answer them, we'll pass them on to EPA and get answers to your questions. And we also have a listserv that GLOW maintains to keep everyone informed. If someone has a question, we can put it up on a listserv, and it broadcasts out to all the grantees, past and present, and we can usually get a response. If someone's looking for a certain type of form, or if someone's looking for a needs assessment or has a question about it, we try to assist in that way. This series of calls, we've been talking to past grantees about sustainability issues, and in going forward, we're going to finish that up today, and then going forward, we're going to start talking about what it takes to plan a new program or an existing program, how to methodically go through your program, needs assessments and partnering, and how to make it as efficient as possible. Today we're going to try to wrap up a little bit about sustainability. We usually start these calls off, though, by with any announcements from Washington, anything we've heard from news from Washington since the last call. GLOW, is there anything you've heard from Joe regarding the RFP or anything particular that we should pass on?
Actually, no, I haven't talked to Joe much at all. He was on vacation. Joe is our project officer at EPA headquarters, and he was on vacation for 3 weeks, I think it was. And so he's been playing a lot of catch-up. So I actually have not talked to him a whole lot. He has sent me several announcements that I've put out on the listserv for him. But as far as the RFP, nothing has changed. They still anticipate that it will be released in December, and I haven't heard anything different from that.
Okay. And the only thing I heard, and you probably got that list, that email from Joe, there is a program called Technical Assistance to Brownfields, and these are usually the universities, and they do things for brownfield communities more from the technical point of view rather than they would be our sister program. They work on the technical end while we work on the job training end. They help communities with technical issues, and one of the Technical Assistance to Brownfield groups put out a citizen's guide, and then I'll put those in the notes. It's a 22-page report that talks about different types of cleanup approaches, and it's a nice little primer on different types of cleanup approaches, whether it's phytoremediation or it might be soil excavation or in situ treatment methods. It kind of goes through about 20 different methods, and it gives you kind of a talking knowledge of different types of cleanup approaches. Reports like this are good for our grantees to look at so that when they're talking to the cleanup people, they've got a familiarity with the types of cleanup. It's interesting that we've got two types of project officers. Some are very technically oriented, and they come from the training group, and many of the best project officers don't have that technical background. They're project officers, and it helps to have a background, read some of these reports in terms of the types of cleanup, the types of health and safety programs that are available, so that you, when you're talking to people in EPA, they use a lot of acronyms in EPA and in the state government, and county government, so you can be familiar with some of these terms. So this is one of the reports, and I'll put it in the post-session notes on how you can access that on the Internet. And it's a brief report that will give you a working knowledge of all of the types of cleanups that are going on in brownfields, and that might be give you some good background. Another thing we usually go through are some announcements. And these are basically the meetings that we feel are fairly important to grantees or anyone interested in job training programs. There's really three things going on that are pretty relevant. The first is the Good Jobs, Green Jobs conference that some of you may have heard about. It's going to be in April, and I'll put all of these in the notes. The Good Jobs, Green Jobs conference is all about all kinds of green jobs. It's heavily supported by organized labor. It's a very interesting and diverse group. It's got organized labor. It's got church groups. EPA is a sponsor of it. They encourage people to attend this. It was the first time I went to the first one of these. I was kind of surprised because they had gospel singers and they had union organizers and they were making signs to go to the Capitol to talked to congressmen and had an advocacy day. So it's not what you're used to in terms of government meetings, but they talk about all types of green jobs, one of which is brownfields. But they also talk about the energy jobs and they talk about conservation jobs and all sorts of anti-coal and there's a large Native American presence there. So if you want to go to an interesting meeting, and we'll be there. It's in April, April 16th through the 18th, and it's called Good Jobs, Green Jobs. And I'll put those in the notes on how you could access that.
Mike, can I ask a question really quick? I just want to make sure that I'm on the distribution email for when you send out the notes because I didn't receive this actual email from you.
Okay.
I actually got it from a coworker regarding
this. Okay, this is what I'd like you to do, and anyone else that listens to this call. Just send me your contact information, and that would be, the address would be msenew at AOL.com. So my name is Michael Senew. That's spelled with an S. So ENEW@AOL.com. And if you just send your contact information, we'll make sure you're on the list until you tell us you don't want to be on the list anymore. And
thank you.
We have a lot of people on the list that just like to get the news, and they often they, as today, they may have a meeting or they may have something going on. They could listen to our calls or they can just read the notes. So I encourage you or anyone who's interested to get your name on that list. And you could pass it around, and there's no cost, no obligation or anything like that. The second and the biggest meeting is the Brownfields 2013 meeting. These meetings occur every 18 months. They're put on by EPA. They used to be free. Now they're going to charge $50 to try to cover the costs because of the budget constraints. This meeting's in May, May 15th through the 17th, and we'll be there also. We're going to have a workshop session at that conference. Brownfields workshops are huge. There are 4,000 people, maybe as many as 5,000. This one's going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. The Good Job, Green Jobs conference that I talked about first is in at the Hilton in Washington, D.C. This one will be in Atlanta in May. May 15th through the 17th, and this is everyone now different than a Good Job, Green Job. This is strictly has to do with Brownfields, and you've got the insurers, you've got the, it's funny because you've got different types of groups, the insurers, you've got the bankers who are coming in the suits, and you've got the techies who are coming in the blue jeans, and they're coming in with the pocket protectors and the engineers, and then you've got the blue jeans crowd, like us, who are the community people, the environmental justice people, the training people. So you've got, it's interesting as you stroll through the crowds. It's a nice mix of people, and it gives the people who are involved in training a chance to talk to the people who are doing the technical cleanup work, and also a chance to talk to the bankers and the insurers. So it's a great conference, and they have a huge display area, and we're going to have a display there as well as the session. And it's, if you're going to go to one conference, if you're not a grantee, this is the one to go to. And it's, the only cost is it's $50, and then you have to, of course, you have to support yourself, find a place to stay in Atlanta. Rooms around there, it's at the convention center downtown. And they're about $150 a night. If you stay out a ways, you could get a cheaper room and commute in. And they get a pretty good subway system there. So that's something to think about. The third thing, and then we'll start talking about the sustainability, is the Greatest Institute. And, Glo, I don't know if this is filled up or not.
Don't know either. I know that I put it out on the listserv, and it usually fills up pretty quickly, but, that was probably a couple of months that I put that out. Let me, when I get back to the office on Monday, I will contact Patty Thompson, who's the person who takes registrations for that, and see how many openings she has left, and I'll send that to you, Mike, and then you can put that in the announcements, in the post-session notes.
Okay, and I might, what I'll do is I might put it in there, and then we'll let everyone know, in the post-session notes if there are openings. But this is a great, now this is for people who really want to get into the technical aspects of health and safety training. It's not so much for project officers, it's more for trainers. It's put on by Partnership for Environmental Technology Education. It's called PEET. It's a national partnership, which is in conjunction with HMTRI. And it's a boot camp, and this goes from June 3rd to the 14th, and it's held in Davenport every year. They go through, it's very technical, 40-hour waste site health and safety training. They talk about 24-hour industrial emergency response, DOT, hazmat, confined space, awareness, communications, disaster site worker. All of these are talked about. It's a great course for you. There are some scholarships available, too. So, and we'll put the applications. You can get an application at nationalpeat.org. We can put these in the notes. If they're filled, they would probably tell you that they are filled, but GLOW will find out if there are some openings. But if you're really interested in the nuts and bolts of health and safety training, this is a great program. They are funded by the National Institute of Environmental Health, NIHS, and it's
the other thing that comes out of this too, Mike, is the fact that the people that attend this have access to use the HMPRI copyrighted curriculum. So that part is huge.
And they give them thousands of pages of curriculum. So if you have a trainer and that is working in your program, you might have them inquire. In fact, you might, if you go to this application, get an application, you might indicate that you're a Brownfield grantee and you would like to participate in this. I think they're also very much interested in working with the EPA grantees. So I would say if there's someone in your organization, if you have a trainer that's teaching the they may have already gone if they're a community college instructor, but if you know of one, you might pass that on that they may want to attend this greatest institute. GLOW, do they need to pay for room and board and that, or is it there's no fee to get in?
There's no fee to get in, and I'm pretty sure, but I'm not positive, that Pete does also pay for their hotel, but I don't know about travel to get there. They may give them some kind of per diem also. But there again, I'm not positive. So
okay.
I know that there's something, but.
On their little brochure, they indicate that there are some, they do have 20 scholarships.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how many total they have there attending.
I don't either.
But,
the class size?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The class size, I think, is between 20 and 25.
Oh, okay.
It's a very much hands-on class.
Okay.
So it is limited.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. It says 20 scholarships covering travel, tuition, lodging, and meals are available from Pete. So that's we'll put these in the notes, and it's something to try. And the other thing is, even if they say it's full, I would suggest you ask them to put you on the waiting list because someone might cancel out. And you might be able to get because they want to fill it up, and so if
yeah, they
cancels,
they
maybe.
Do have a waiting list. Every year we have a waiting list. So
okay, great. Well, we could get you could get on the waiting list and do that as soon as possible. In terms of the grant opportunities that are coming up right now, the only thing that's on the table, except for this RFP that'll be coming out this next month, is the there is an environmental justice small grant program. And it's $1.5 million. They're going to give out about 50 grants. They're about $30,000 each. And we'll have the linkage to get that RFP. They're small grants, but the nice thing is there's a lot of them. And there's going to be a pre-application call on December 1st and December 13th. So we'll get that out so you can listen in on that call if you're interested. These are little grants. They have a peripheral. They can work with a Brownfields job training program. They're really aimed at environmental justice. But I think if you write your grant from the point of view of an environmental justice, I think you have a shot at getting some funding from that. And it might be something you might want to look into after talking to the people and talking to your regional person. Well. What we wanted to do today is summarize what we had been talking about the last two sessions. We were talking about startup funding first, and we had a couple of the grantees on who had grants and what happened when their grants ended. Many of these grants, we have about six grantees who have been, I call it re-upped. They've resubmitted grants. Five times, and this is when grants were 2 years at a time. They do have a restriction. If you have a grant, you have to wait out a year. But there are several programs that have had 5 grants re-upped over the years. The ones that we've talked to, as a matter of fact, and they've been extremely successful. But one thing about it is there are many that have not been re-upped. And what we want to do is prepare people to be sustainable if they are not re-upped. And sometimes what happens is because you get a grant doesn't automatically mean you're going to get one the next year. And some of our best grantees will resubmit, and there are just so many people. There are two prevailing thoughts going on in the agency. One is if you do a really good job, you should continue to get funded. Another prevailing thought is if everyone wants to go to the trough, and this is what the Jeff Barnett, one of the regional reps, said. We've got a lot of people who want to participate in this, and we can't just keep giving the grants to the same people. So we have to spread them around. So what that indicates is you may have a really good grant, but there might be some years where you wouldn't necessarily be refunded. And they do grant these pretty much on past performance. If you have a real successful, we have someone out in California, Northern California, that has such a good program, and he keeps getting refunded every year, every cycle, does a great job in working with his grantees. We've had other ones, they've done excellent jobs, incredible jobs, but have not been, had to wait out for a cycle or two. So the question is how do you sustain your program in those lean periods where you may not have a grant? And one of the questions that's going to come up and people are going to ask is the fiscal cliff. Everyone's talking about fiscal cliff. It appears as if, I would never want to speak for EPA, nor could I, or the federal government, or what's going to happen in appropriations, but this program is authorized in the Brownfields bill. It's a question of what the appropriations are every year. Two things going on. They're trying to expand the program to include other media like water and chemical awareness. And you're going to see in the RFP that we're going to start talking about next time that there will be additional cycles, as there were this time, additional programs like wastewater, and which weren't there before. And the reason they've made these aren't more inclusive is those programs are kicking in some money into the program. So the positive is there's some other EPA programs that are kicking money into this job training program. The negative is there's cuts in the overall EPA budget, which is taking money out of the program. So those two competing programs result in pretty much it's been steadily and evenly balanced. So they've been able to hold their funding. Every time we see them, they say there's going to be severe cuts and there's going to be cuts, and we just don't know. The program, there's no indication that it won't continue because it's authorized, and it's one of the star programs in this program. And also, other indications that there will be as program continuing is they continue to fund these other brownfield programs. So, for example, the environmental justice program is being funded as we speak. So the chances of them canceling this for some reason are, I think, would be very small because they're taking RFPs for the environmental justice. They've taken RFPs for the assessment and the planning program. So there's no reason why they wouldn't be accepting, except if there was some huge congressional change or mandate that they wouldn't be doing the job training program. So it will likely continue. Hopefully the funding will increase. EPA would say don't count on that. But the question is how do you sustain yourself in these slim periods? And we talked about earlier calls, we talked about for startup funding and also it'll apply to sustainability funding. We suggested linking up with a governmental agency, and I had noted that 6 of the last 12 or 13 grantees were, many of them were county governmental agencies as fiscal agent, and then they partnered with the community group, and there were some good reasons for that. One is that they had the auditors in place. They had a track record they had a track record of working with the federal government. They had grants administration experience. So they brought most of these governmental entities brought to the table a whole lot of resources that maybe a community group wouldn't have. And we suggested one approach to both getting startup funding or startup resources and also sustainability was to hook up with the, find out if the city has got a brownfields program and if they're interested in also having a job training program. And they bring to a whole lot of resources to the table. They can bring in their WIBs, and we've got a WIB on the call. They can bring in their placement services. They can bring in their emergency respond facilities and perhaps even trainers. Usually what happens is the city does not want to do the training, or actually often doesn't want to do any of the real work involved, but they'll be the administrator and project officer and coordinator, but they'll link with a community college or a community group, and that community group or community college will be doing a lot of the work. Durham was a good model where the city is the fiscal agent, brought to the table a whole lot of city resources, and then let the community college do the work, basically. And they're developing the curriculum, they're doing the labor market assessments, they're doing much of the work, but the city is providing that base that they could build upon. And we discussed that gives you a whole lot of backup, a lot of meat on bones for sustainability and for startup, and even for leveraging your resources. And the reason we talked about linking with the city government in some form is when we talk about sustainability, if a grant were to end, a city government might be very reluctant to just terminate a program. Universities, the way they're structured, and often community colleges, we find that when grant funds run out, the programs dry up and they can't support them. Some can. What happens in community colleges and some universities is they morph the program more into a continuing ed type program where they continue with their environmental education program, but they might not necessarily be doing a brownfields job training program. So what happens is it kind of changes from a job training program to more of a community college program or a university program that's involved in environmental education, and then they may reapply later and then morph back into a job training program. A city might not do that. They may find other funds to continue the program till the next time, till the next re-up, and see if they could reapply for funds. So the third entity, when we're not talking about a university or a city government, would be a large community organization. And we found in the case of, for example, St. Nick's, St. Nick's had five applications that were refunded, and then they didn't get one. And it wasn't because their performance fell off. It was just that they, for whatever reason, they were not selected to be refunded, but it wasn't any deficiency in their program. Well, the nice thing about St. Nick's is during that time they were able to get some sustained funding locally, and they're working on some funding from another grant. And so this is what you need to do, is to look at the sustained funding that will pull you up until you go to the next round. So when we talk about sustainability, when you're talking about if you're in one of these grants or you're looking at one of these grants, it's really very important to link up to the city entity, even if they're not part of the grant right now, to see to the extent that you could partner with them in some sense. If you're a community group or a nonprofit organization, again, link up to the larger group to see if there might be funds from other organizations, whether it be Young Community Developers or some some Department of Labor program that, you will sustain you if for some reason you don't get refunded for one of the cycles, so you could keep on going. There are a host of that we talk about in the annual meeting of smaller type grants. You can get funds from foundations and small grants, but they're additional grants rather than heavy, large grants that allow you to keep your program going. So, again, I guess we're reiterating this fact of whether if you're an existing grantee, this importance of linking up, trying to link up with a larger group, even if they're not in the grant at this point, to try to link up with them just from the point of view of when this grant ends, and in the event it's not refunded, that you can link or hook up to another program for a while and then wait out a cycle and then reapply. So we do try to keep these to 30 minutes. Did anyone have any questions on anything we talked about today? We usually like to engage people in discussion, but we had a lot of announcements today, so we weren't able to do that. Anyone have any questions or anything today? No? Okay. Well, we're going to be meeting again on December 5th, and we're going to start talking about this RFP that will be coming out. And I hope you all have a really good Thanksgiving and lots of good turkey.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thank you.